Enterprise Linux Security is brought to you by TuxCare, a company that helps you modernize your Linux security. Definitely check out TuxCare to see how they can help you automate Linux patching while minimizing downtime, staying compliant, and ensuring business continuity. Check them out at TuxCare.com.
Hello and welcome to Enterprise Linux Security episode 103, which is one of my favorite titles for one of our episodes, Pretty Sly for a Wi-Fi. We're going to talk about a pretty clever Wi-Fi attack, which is like using a laptop as a man in the middle between two networks. We're going to talk about that. And it was, according to the article, App28 is the hacking group that's responsible. So we're going to talk about Wi-Fi today, which I know everyone gets excited about Wi-Fi because it's probably, what, the third most hated thing in IT next to printers and DNS?
Yeah, probably. Hi, Jay. As always, a pleasure. We're going to be covering some actions that have been attributed to App28, also known by the really cool name Fancy Bear, amidst a plethora of other names that have been assigned to them by different security firms. Mm-hmm. But this is the same group that's apparently been active since 2004. They've been responsible for some pretty high-profile hacks, like the Hillary Clinton emails in 2016 or 2015 apparently has been traced back to them. They're supposedly affiliated with Russian military intelligence. There was this firm, the security firm called Veloxity, that came out with the report of a brand new tactic that they identified. And it's, again, pretty clever. And it's really a good example of the type of things that you might be faced in the real world. Even if you're not necessarily a target for Russian intelligence, it will shine a light on some things that you might look at in your own infrastructure to be able to avoid this type of attacks.
So this, one thing I want to say up front, this is not something that just happened. It's something that just came out, but this is a hack that took place in 2022. So we're getting some details about it now. There was a presentation about this, so there's some information coming out about it. And it's pretty, I mean, it's simple, but it's clever. So basically what happened here is you had a company who basically had an employee that docked their laptop. They had one of those docks. I'm sure a lot of the people in the audience use one. And it's what, if you don't already know, it's just a way of making your laptop into a desktop. You can plug a dock into it and have a screen, your keyboard and mouse and everything. And this dock also had Ethernet. So the employee was using Ethernet. You know, so far so good. Ethernet is better than Wi-Fi. We all know that. And with Wi-Fi turned off. But what happened was a threat actor got into that laptop and then turned on Wi-Fi and then was able to connect to the Wi-Fi at the target, the, you know, adjacent building. And I think they hopped a couple of times inside that building before actually getting to their intended target. But that Wi-Fi connection allowed them to be connected to the other, at a company in the other building. So if you think about this, you have Ethernet connected to the company that that employee works for and Wi-Fi connected to someone else's company. So someone can come in via Ethernet and leave via Wi-Fi into another network. And then the individual or group used tactics to get to the target from there. So basically, in this case, the laptop was used effectively as a network bridge.
Yeah, let's get the context from the beginning here. In the early days of Wi-Fi, you had this technique that people would use when they're trying to look for open networks called war driving. You would essentially do exactly what says in the title. You would drive around with a laptop and you would look for open networks. This worked remarkably well in urban environments. You would easily find networks that you could log into. And it was a relatively good way of connecting to somebody else's network. In later years, there's this close attack tactic that's deployed. It's the car in the parking lot. Somebody parks a car near the target. There's a laptop. There's somebody doing the hacking from the parking lot. And again, essentially like the war driving, you're not just looking for open networks. You're looking for networks that you can actually attack that are using, say, weak encryption, or that are using stuff that can be easily cracked, like WPA or something like that. And that's one type of attack that we've known for a few years, one type of threat that we know for a few years. And even the operational security folks, the guys that actually do security for environments, they know how to look for those types of things, and they know how to protect against them. It's not uncommon for companies to do perimeter sweeps to see if they can still pick up their Wi-Fi signal and use blockers or move access points further inside of their buildings to prevent leakage of the signal to the outside or reducing the power from the antennas. That's something pretty standard. In fact, this particular group, App 28 Fancy Bear, some of their members had been arrested in 2018 in the Netherlands when they tried to do exactly that next to an international body on the prohibition of chemical weapons. And they were parked near to the building, and police got word of it, and they picked them up, and they were indicted for that. So that's something that we know they do.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting in this story, the one that came out right now, and this was published at a conference called WarCon in Arlington, Virginia, a couple of weeks back. It's when this was divulged, this story. Even though, like you said, it actually happened in 2022, and it actually happened in February of 2022, and the other significant event that happened in that month was the actual invasion of Ukraine by Russia. This happened a couple of weeks prior and continued a few weeks after that fact. And in the company that was actually hacked, there was information about Ukraine-related projects and individuals working there. So there is a bit more to this than it might seem at first glance.
Right, and if I'm not mistaken, they were they had the antennas in their trunk when they were arrested. Like they had Wi-Fi gear. Antennas in their trunk. That's a love. I mean, they were like war driving, like legit. I mean, that was incredible. I mean, that's wow.
It's like the Pringle cans with the antenna.
Oh yeah, antennas. I remember those.
Cantennas, very old. We're dating ourselves. So the interesting thing here is that they're essentially replaying the same type of attack without actually having to be in the neighborhood of their victim. The way they did this was that they wanted to attack a specific organization in Washington, D.C. This organization was outsourcing security service to Velocity. That's why they got involved into this, and that's how they were looking at the systems that got hacked. And the way that And again, this was only learned much further during the analysis, because initial analysis was pretty hard to do due to some obfuscation techniques that the attackers used. But Velocity was alerted by some alert systems that they had, some rules that they had, that a server inside that network that they were protecting had been hacked. Looking at the logs, they traced the entry point into the network to an access point in a conference room in one end of the building. And they swept the building looking for the Raspberry Pi in the closet that they couldn't find, like we always say, looking for printers, looking for whatever other devices could be connecting to the network and providing an entry point. And they found nothing. At that point, they still didn't have enough log in place on the DHCP server, on radios, on other systems that allowed them to get the full picture. They deployed that logging. And because the attacker was extremely persistent, they had the opportunity to detect breaches at a later date. When they did, they noticed that the connection attempt to that wireless access point actually leaked a domain that matched the company name across the street. So that's when they realized that it wasn't coming from inside the building. It was not like a scary movie. It was coming from across the street. Getting in touch with that company across the street, they found out that there was a laptop that was compromised. Like you said before, that laptop was dual home, meant that it was connected to internet and it had a wireless card that they could use. And this is particularly important because when you're sweeping for networks, when you're trying to connect to networks, you would lose connectivity if that was the only connection that you had on the device. So finding a device that happened to be connected to internet and have a wireless network available, that was like finding the jackpot for these guys. So they had compromised that company's network, they moved laterally inside that company until they identified that particular laptop, and then they used that laptop as the jump point to their actual target network. And that made it like war driving without the driving part and without actually having to be next to the building. So they could be sitting halfway across the world and still hack that network through the wireless network. That's right. Pretty impressive.
It is. War driving is very effective, but it's also very obvious. You know, you see someone standing at near your building with a laptop. I mean, and they're there for a while. I mean, chances are there's going to be some questions. But if they're in another country, you can't see that they're there. One of the first thoughts I had when I read this story, other than, of course, that's what they did, because a lot of these hacks, sometimes it's clever, but then I also think, but it's also something that I would have thought would have happened by now. And then I start to think, well, it probably has happened in the past because this is not easy to detect. Here we have a company that did detect it and, they're talking about it, but how many times in the past has this happened? And I can't believe that this is the first time. It might be the first time it's come out, but I can't believe it's the first time this trick has ever been used.
There's actually a few points that actually reinforce that idea. And the story doesn't actually end with that laptop across the street. It turns out that the network on that second company where the laptop was found was actually breached from another company on the different floor from that same building. So it was the second jump point that is known for this particular attack. It wasn't even the actual network that they breached. And interestingly, the way that they gained privileges inside the network was through some employee's account that they bought on the dark web. But the way that they elevated the privileges was through a vulnerability in Windows Spooler that didn't become public until a few months after the fact. So they weren't using a publicly disclosed vulnerability. They were using stuff that essentially only they themselves knew about. So it's the type of things that you cannot defend against. It's the threats that you don't know that exist. And these guys were using that. So that's part of the reason why attribution is being made to the Russian intelligence here.
Yeah, agreed. And we have to keep in mind that we report on the things we know about. There's a whole nother side of security and different things and tricks and techniques that they're doing that we don't know about, because there's no benefit to a threat actor to divulge how they do certain things. If they have a way of doing something that's unique or, you know, clever, obviously they'll sell things on the dark web, like hacking kits and things like that. But often a threat actor will just keep some of these things close to their chest, because the minute that it gets out there and people start talking about it, then the next thing people talk about is, okay, but what do I do about it? How do I prevent this? And that's a conversation that they really don't want to happen.
One of the things that this brings attention to is the weakness of wireless networks. You usually have this perimeter protection, this firewall that protects from connections coming in from the outside, meaning the internet, towards your internal network. And you have that pretty well set up and you have that pretty well defended. You only let the communications that you need to let in and you keep everything else on the outside. However, wireless networks are usually not considered to be external. They are usually at a place in the network perimeter where they are closer to the internal systems than to the outside world, meaning that the traffic that comes from Wi-Fi doesn't go through the perimeter firewall. It simply gets a different VLAN or it gets some other form of firewall or something like that, but it's already internal. It's not considered to be external traffic. And this is true on most infrastructures. So it's actually a good tactic for an attacker to go after the wireless network first, because they are immediately sidestepping most of the protections that you might have on your perimeter. And it's also one of the reasons why you should keep all of your systems up to date and all of your systems secured and not just rely on the perimeter firewall for protection. If you keep your systems insecure and you don't really worry about keeping your systems up to date and patched simply because they are protected behind the firewall, this is a good example of why that doesn't hold, why that is not true. If somebody gets through the perimeter, whether through some other vulnerability or through gumming through the wireless like these guys did, then your servers that you didn't update properly, the ones that you didn't secure properly, those are going to be hit. This is called, this type of protection is called security in depth. There are other names that people assign to this, but you really need to make sure that all of your systems, regardless of where they are on the infrastructure, they need to be kept up to date. They need to be kept secure. That's the baseline stuff that you can do to protect your infrastructure from this. Again, the specific vulnerability that they used to gain elevation was not covered by this. These were actually Windows systems. But still, the same concept applies. This isn't something that only applies to Windows. There are vulnerabilities everywhere. So, yeah.
I think one of the issues with Wi-Fi is that difficulty is relatively low compared to other means of intrusion. And the reason for this is because for most of the settings you can add to Wi-Fi, there's something fairly straightforward that a threat actor can do against it. For example, let's say you enable MAC address filtering. Okay, so you can only allow certain, even if they know the password, only certain MAC addresses can connect. But then a threat actor could find out a MAC address that is allowed to connect and use, you know, MAC address spoofing to try to get in anyway. You have a really secure password and maybe even two-factor or whatever. And if you don't keep the firmware up to date, then someone uses a vulnerability in the firmware to bypass authentication anyway. I mean, I can go on. It's like you could use a Wi-Fi analyzer outside your building and walk around the perimeter and find out, you know, how far from your building does your Wi-Fi actually go? And then you can lower the signal strength to kind of bring it into the building more. But even then, I mean, conceivably, a threat actor can get a Wi-Fi range extender and still do the same thing. So this, what I guess my point is, Wi-Fi isn't the kind of thing where you can only do just a few things to secure it. You have to do as many things as possible because you really do need that layered approach, because a lot of the different layers are easily bypassed by threat actors. And what you're hoping for is that the sum of all your parts, your settings, your firmware, your range, whatever else you have combined together is going to thwart away threat actors, because it's an easy target and there's a lot of nuances with Wi-Fi. I mean, how many people truly understand Wi-Fi? It's like this black magic, but you really have to step up your A game with Wi-Fi, because that's a very, it's like having an iron building with a glass door.
Start with multi-factor authentication. That never fails. And these guys did not have multi-factor authentication on Wi-Fi. Keep your radius settings very tight. Use the radio servers to provide you with the authentication for the Wi-Fi and to make sure that the devices are properly configured and patched before they join the network. That also helps. Restrict as much as possible. And we know that everybody tries to make it easy for devices to get connected to Wi-Fi. The boss's phone has to connect to Wi-Fi on the first try. You don't want him to come over just to get him connected to Wi-Fi. You don't want to make anybody's life harder simply because they can't get online to work. And people will complain about that. It's the type of things that people will complain, like when you increase the complexity of passwords, it's another one. Getting people, making sure that people can connect wireless is one of the stuff that will get you support tickets. But on the other hand, as this example clearly shows, it's clearly a very useful and used attack vector. And the geopolitical situation is not getting better. If your company does business in any way connected to the federal government or two or three steps removed, you're still part of the supply chain. You're still part of a potentially list of targets. And we've seen that time and time again. Just because you're not actually in that industry, you're not actually providing the service that might be interesting to an attacker, you might be providing service to a third party that is actually doing business with them. That makes you a great target for this. And yeah, now they don't even have to go to the parking lot to execute this attack, so they can simply try everybody. And it works.
And something I want to clarify, a lot of people don't think of. Obviously, I'm going to recommend one of the things that everyone does is check to make sure your access point firmware is up to date. But also, if there is no available update, I want you to look at the end of life date for your hardware, because sometimes someone might think, oh yeah, it's up to date, so I should be good. But you know, up to date meaning it updated last week, or up to date meaning your last update was 5 years ago. So, you know, Wi-Fi is one of those things that we're human. We could just, you know, it works. It's running. People are connected to it. No one's complaining. Let's fight some fires and put out some fires and tech problems. And then how many of us go back and make sure the firmware is up to date on our network appliances? And if it is up to date, is it up to date just because the company stopped supporting it? Or is it up to date because, you know, reasonably you are up to date? And that's a pretty important question to try to get an answer to. I think everyone needs to at least be aware of that.
And properly segment your networks. And don't just lump your wireless access points with the rest of your systems. That's a recipe for disaster. If for no other reason, because you're exposing your systems to unwarranted risks that you really have an opportunity to avoid. If they don't need to see your systems, don't let them see your systems. Don't let users on wireless connect to your internal systems, your critical mission systems, because they really don't need to. If they have different requirements, connect to a different network. Segregate the network, segregate the actual Wi-Fi segments. Don't just lump everything together. And another takeaway here, and this is something that Veloxity struggled with when they were trying to analyze this. Get proper logging in place. This includes all of the infrastructure services like the HCP, like Radius, like the authentication service that you're using. Make sure that your logging is logging as much as possible for as long as possible. Ideally, outside of the systems where they are running. Ideally, multiple copies of the logs. I know this sounds like overkill, but it's only overkill until you actually need those logs and don't have them.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the case. You need to have those logs, especially logging application that can, you know, link things together, highlight similar IP addresses and different applications. So you can kind of track, okay, this app was accessed by this IP address and it was also accessed on this port. I'm going to underscore something I kind of passively mentioned earlier about your Wi-Fi range. I mean, yeah, we want our Wi-Fi range to be as far as possible, but really only in our building. We kind of do need to know how far away the signal goes. And there's applications that you can download for probably just about every app operating system. I forgot the names of them, but they're like Wi-Fi analyzers, and you can see the signal strength and you can walk around and just find out, like, you know, does it start to cut off 2 feet from the building? We're able to make it, you know, 50 feet away from the building. And kind of get an idea. And what you could do is the access points that are closer to the walls of the building, you can lower the power of those. So that way they don't go as far away outside the building. Especially don't have your access point near the window of your conference room facing an adjacent building, because that's making it a little bit easier, I would say.
One of the main things that people look at when they're trying to plan their Wi-Fi coverage is making sure that they're covering every single spot. They're completely ignoring the stuff that they're leaking to the outside. Make that also important when you're planning. If you're planning to deploy wireless coverage on a different floor or a different building, don't just worry about covering everything. Make sure that you're not leaking more than you have to. Again, and this is more of a social idea than actually an IT one. Know your neighbors. And I don't just mean know the company names that are next to yours, actually know the IT people from those companies. And this might just sound silly, but if you actually know the people who work next door, the people who do similar jobs to you, it's not just good from a connection standpoint and you can grab some brewskis after work. You actually have somebody you can talk to when you're trying to find the root cause for a problem like this, and you can give them a call or you can talk to them directly because you have some type of connection with them, and that makes the whole process easier. Rather than growing to that formal stuff of sending an email to the corporate whatever and making sure that you get a reply from from compliance and from all the lawyers and all of that, just give them a call on the phone, just talk to them on the street, reach out to them directly. It speeds up the entire process. And when you're trying to find root causes, when you're trying to identify this type of problems, you really need to be quick when doing it. So if you actually know the people working next door to you, all around the building, then that's a big plus, and that's something that's a soft skill that you don't really think too much about.
No, you have a really good point. I mean, it's a lot more challenging to talk to the IT person at the building next door to let them know you think their network was compromised. And then their response is, who are you? You know, like they don't even know who you are. And, you know, it's a lot easier, like you said, to have that conversation if something like that is to happen. But, you know, the community aspect is often not looked at. I mean, to be honest, a lot of people in this, you know, no judgment, I'm an introvert too, but a lot of us are, but we have to break outside of that. And we have to talk to people. We have to make those connections, because even if it's not a security issue or even a disaster, sometimes, you know, having a beer with someone and just saying, hey, I had this strange thing that happened. Have you ever seen this before? I mean, it really helps. And then building that community, I think, of people there. And besides, one thing I know, regardless of how introverted you are, people love to talk about their systems. They just do. Like, just ask them about their network. Usually that's a good icebreaker. And then then you'll probably just, they probably won't stop talking after about 10 minutes. But no, anyway, but I definitely agree. You have to, you know, make that connection. And I mean, your neighbors, right? So you got to know your neighbors, and it kind of helps you know the lay of the land. And I think it's important.
One thing that we always bring up is the IoT device in the closet, the Raspberry Pi in the closets or on the false ceiling or something like that. That's a real risk, you know. In this particular case, it wasn't that, but it might as well have been. That's the first thing that this company looked for, was looking on all the closets to see if there was something there doing this. So the fact that they immediately jumped to that conclusion, this is a compromised device, this is a plant that has been left in the conference room. Somebody came in for a reunion and left this in one of the closets and nobody noticed it. And this has been leaking our network to somebody else. That's a real threat. Make sure that you know all the devices that are on your wireless network and on your physical network, on your Ethernet as well. Know the stuff that's connected to your network. That's really important. And make sure that if you don't know something connected to the network, you can easily disconnect it and find out what it is. This is critical. When you're looking at organizations that have this level of resources, you can bet that that's something they're going to try. That's a very important attack vector right here. The operational security folks, they know how to sweep for this. They know how to look for this. These guys, they really know what they're doing. This is something that the IT folks is not especially tailored to handle, but the operational security folks, they are. And this is probably something that you need to invest a bit more in if you're actually looking to secure your environment.
And one thing you could do too that kind of helps is enabling ARPWatch if you're a pfSense user. At first, it's super noisy because it's going to report on literally every single thing that's connected to your network. But once you get the baseline of, you know, the machines that are supposed to be there, and then you see it'll report another MAC address has joined the network. But if you didn't buy a new device or didn't approve a new device and you didn't hire a new employee, wait a minute, there shouldn't be any new devices on the network. What's up with that? I mean, obviously that's not going to catch everything, but it's just one of the things you could do between that logging, firmware, you know, checking the range of your Wi-Fi. I mean, there's a number of things that you can do, but you really should be doing as many of the things as possible when it comes to Wi-Fi, because no one thing you could do to fix Wi-Fi, other than maybe two-factor authentication, is really going to benefit you a lot by itself. But once you add the layers together, that's where security happens. And that's true of everything, not just Wi-Fi. Just Wi-Fi has some inherent weaknesses that make some of these things even more important than they would be on other things.
And you can bet that threat actors are paying attention to this. It's not just us talking about this news story. If a particular threat group didn't know about this attack vector, they know now. So you can rest assured that this is going to be repeated. or it has already happened prior to this one. This might not have been the first time that it was attempted, and nobody noticed it. And nobody noticed it because these guys were extremely careful. They cleared after themselves pretty well. They erased all of their tracks. They actually went so far as to encrypt the space occupied by whatever tools they were using so that they couldn't be undeleted and recovered and analyzed. And they went through all of that. You can rest assured that that's now part of whatever playbook hackers are using right now on new targets, because it worked so well. And it's not going to stop there. It's not going to be the only time that this tactic was used. So if you're, and here in Europe, I don't know if in the US there is this segregation, but in urban areas, you usually have commercial areas, you have office space, you have office buildings, and there's a lot of companies packed together in stuff in cities like, say, New York or any major city. You will essentially have companies on top of each other on sequential floors of the same building. So wireless coverage is going to hit them no matter what. There's no amount of wireless.
Well, that's a good point. If you're only 2 feet away from the next company, that's really hard to segregate.
You cannot segregate that. So you will always be in range of another company's Wi-Fi. So you really need to pay attention to this. You need to segregate the networks. You need multi-factor authentication at every level. You need great logging. And yeah, you also need a healthy dose of luck. But right now in cybersecurity, that's just like every single day that you need a whole lot of luck to be able to avoid these type of things.
So my challenge to our listeners is to audit your Wi-Fi. Find something weak. Fix it, obviously with proper approval and management approval and a change request. But still, take a look and see if anything stands out. And just assuming you have permission to look, I'm not asking for anyone to get in trouble. But I really do think anyone who is responsible for a Wi-Fi network at a company, just have a look. Just look through the settings and to see what stands out, to see if there's any additional security features in your access point you're not utilizing that might benefit you. And, among the other things that we mentioned, gotta love Wi-Fi.
Don't use outdated security protocols. Don't use outdated encryption protocols. If you want a good way to assess your network security, look for a device called Wi-Fi Pineapple. It's used by threat groups, but it's great to do red team testing on your network. Wi-Fi Pineapple, I'm not endorsing it, but it's a great device for this type of situations. And it would help you detect any weak point on the wireless network. At this point, I really need to give some kudos to Stephen Adair from Volexity, who gave his presentation at CyberWorkCon a couple of weeks ago and was essentially the source for all of the stuff that we've been talking so far. It was a really good analysis that they did from this event. They provided great information. They provided actionable information for whoever is paying attention and for whoever wants to look for weaknesses on their own environments. And this is really helpful. The fact that it happened in this company and was caught can mean that lots of other companies look at their Wi-Fi and their different settings and prepare better than these guys were. So that's it for our episode today. Thank you very much for joining. This is a really interesting story. I do advise everybody who's interested in it to look it up and read about it more. Volexity has a great write-up about this on their website. And yeah, it's yet another threat vector that we weren't aware that we had, and hackers are exploiting it. Thank you very much to everybody that joined. As always, it was a pleasure, and until the next one.
And I just want to mention real quick, we are off next week. I'm going to be in Chicago. So next week in particular, there won't be a new episode, but we will be back as soon as I'm back. So thank you guys so much for watching and or listening. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.